I always felt self-conscious using the men's restroom. Now that I use the women's restroom, you think it would be easier for me. Unfortunately, the general public seems to have issues with it.
Having to pee. It's one of the most universal experiences human beings share. But while most of us take using public restrooms for granted, it's one of those ordinary moments that can become complicated for transgender people.
Did you go in the right door this time?
Of course I went to the right door. I always hate how people always ask the question, especially early on in the transition, about which restroom do you use? I'm going in there to relieve myself, nothing more. I hate how people always say stupid things about, like...
They always play it like you have another agenda, and it's like, seriously?
I'm Gina Kaufman, and that scene comes from a new reality TV show set in Kansas City. It's called New Girls on the Block, and it follows local transgender women who have been getting together for girls' nights out since 2011. The show follows them to familiar places around town, like Arthur Bryant's and Coffee Girls. It's got us wondering how much of the transgender experience is shaped by the city you live in and the culture that exists there. What's Kansas City like for the transgender community? That's the big question on today's Central Standard. Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. We've got a handful of guests to hear from on this. Caroline Gibbs makes some appearances in New Girls on the Block. She's the therapist who founded Kansas City's Transgender Institute. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Gina.
And Luke Harness is also here with us. He's a recent UMKC grad who's been active in trying to provide more visibility for transgender issues on campus at his alma mater. Hi, Luke.
Hi, Gina. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Sandra Mead is also here with us. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. You've been hosting a radio show called Trans Talk, which airs every fourth Saturday on KKFI. I understand you may be leaving the show in June.
I have. I've given notice. We've been training a couple very capable hosts. Luke is one of them. Luke and Una Nowling are going to be taking the show. June will be my last show.
When did you start hosting Trans Talk?
Well, it's been on and off for the last 3 years. My first appearance on the show was actually, Caroline was associated with the show. She was one of the hosts back in March 3 years ago, last month, and that was my first appearance. So I've been associated with that show now for about 3 years. For the last 2 years or so, I've been the regular host, and recently started bringing on Una and Luke and training them. So it's time to turn the reins over to somebody else.
What's the idea behind the show? I mean, why do you feel that it's important to have this kind of forum to regularly check in and discuss these issues?
It absolutely is. Mainstream media doesn't have very many regular outlets for the trans voice. Our voice is mostly represented by other people who are speaking for us rather than us speaking ourselves. So that's the critical aspect of Trans Talk, is it's actually trans people relating their experiences and their lives and their hardships. And, you know, there are many of them. So I think it's a critically important outlet.
As a transgender woman yourself, are there times when you learn something unexpected from the guests you speak with, from the people who are sharing with you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the one thing that I can say about the transgender community is, just like any other community, it's not a homogeneous community. We're all individuals. We all have unique experiences. We all have unique paths. No one path is the same as anybody else. And so how, you know, we all deal with many of the same challenges, the same stereotypes and biases that affect any of us affect all of us. But how we deal with that and how our families deal with that and how our friends deal with that differs greatly. And so I learn all the time. I'm constantly humbled by, in many cases, the courage and the bravery that some of them are going through.
Overall, would you say that the picture you've gotten from your own experience and from the stories people you've talked to have shared with you, that Kansas City is a relatively comfortable place to be a transgender person, or is there a lot of work to be done here?
You know, amazingly, given that we're in the middle of the Bible Belt here, Kansas City is sort of an oasis for the trans community. It has been a welcoming community for the trans community for a very long time. That said, there's still difficulties. There's still a long ways to go in Kansas City. But quite frankly, the administration, Mayor Sly James, is supportive. Chief Forte is supportive. And
what does that mean for public officials like these to be supportive? I mean, what does that look like?
like?
Respectful. They're respectful. They respect our names, our genders. Non-discrimination policies are supportive of non-discrimination policies and unsupportive of businesses that would want to discriminate. So things like that. So Kansas City is an amazingly supportive city. It really is.
I mean, obviously, you say for pockets. A long time. What are we talking about?
Decades. We've had shows on KKFI talking about the history of the transgender community, including the drag shows early on, you know, before very many people were actually coming out as trans, right on through now. So it's actually been decades.
Caroline, what would you say about this question of how comfortable Kansas City is, relatively speaking, for the transgender community?
I agree with Sandra entirely. This is a very comfortable place for trans people to be. And we like to think at the Transgender Institute that we have afforded a kind of haven for people who, as they begin to come out as trans folks, they can come to us and feel respected and feel safe and honored as they move through their transitions. So we do believe, and I agree, as I said, entirely with Sandra, that this is an oasis in spite of the location of this this city. And for example, you mentioned at the top of the hour New Girls on the Block, and the fact that that show is set in Kansas City is truly astounding. When we were out in L.A., I have a part to play in the show. I'm a co-executive producer, and I'm on air and as well on the screen as well. We went out to visit in L.A. with the TV Critics Association, and the one question they kept asking over and over and over again was, why Kansas City?
What's the answer to that?
And the answer to that is partly magical, partly because there's a long, long history. Una Nowling is our major historian in Kansas City. She will be taking over the reins at KKFI soon. And she writes a wonderful blog. I call it an online newsletter. And she does a beautiful job. It's not really a blog. It is researched. It is beautifully written. There's a lot of history in it for anybody who wants to know the history of transgender in Kansas City. Read that blog.
So it is interesting that we do seem to have this long history, and I'm wondering why. What is it about Kansas City that put it in that position?
I don't believe personally that it's anything special about Kansas City, the water, or whatever else. I think just serendipity, somehow people, the very early days, the people on whose shoulders trans women and trans men stand, these people were simply brave. And they came out and they endured a lot of marginalization and sadness and all types of persecution, and somehow they were strong enough to make it. We talk about at Transgender Institute about having a backbone of steel, and these women and men in the early days clearly had that backbone of steel.
Luke, I want to turn to you on this. What is your perception of Kansas City? You're pretty young. So what is a young transgender person's perspective on Kansas City as a place to be?
Well, I think that's a good question. I was definitely in my own little bubble at UMKC. I worked with Jonathan Pryor, the director of LGBTQI services, and we were trying to figure out on campus what could we do to raise awareness or offer support to different students. You know, we don't know exactly how many students there were. Some people don't want to be outed or don't want to be associated with that. So we had a rough time trying to get that accomplished. And we met up with the counseling center, and they helped us start a support group. And so I was definitely in that little bubble with UMKC and that support group. And then coming out of UMKC and graduating into the real world, some would say, Sandra's been a great help in getting me introduced to, you know, the community at large, I would say, you know, working with KKFI and doing different panels. So I'm definitely getting my bubble popped for sure, coming out into the real world in Kansas City and working. And then I'm realizing that, yes, Kansas City is definitely a great place for trans people and the support. So it's interesting coming from that UMKC bubble, feeling like the world was really small, and then entering Kansas City and this great community that already offers so much support in different ways.
Can you tell me about some landmarks in that journey for you? Just what it meant to be in a small community at UMKC, like a story that would really illustrate the sentiment of that, and then sort of take me through some of your early moments, maybe things that you thought wouldn't go so well and how it actually panned out.
Okay, I'm trying to think of, you know, some of the early groups that we had at the support group at UMKC. There was only a few core people that were meeting every week. So we became really close. So it was really a close-knit group. And I have since walked away from the group to do other things. But I know that it's getting a lot bigger now. So that's really awesome. So just thinking about, you know, that core group is, it's a lot of good memories and the conversations that we had. And there are a lot of people that were genderqueer or non-binary in that group. And so
can you define those terms just to catch everyone up?
Sure. Someone who identifies as genderqueer or non-binary, neither identify as male or female or anywhere in that gender spectrum. They may be outside of it. There's also gender fluid. Genderqueer is really an umbrella term for people who would fall under that. So we had a lot of non-binary people that,
gotcha,
you know, used neutral pronouns, they, them. So we had a lot of those students from the Art Institute, actually, that came in. So that was a really great experience, too, learning from them.
And they came to UMKC for that kind of support?
Yes.
That's so interesting, because the stereotype of art school would be that this would be the most welcoming of people of all kinds of people, but people coming to UMKC for support. What do you think that's about?
Well, I can't speak for those students specifically, but I know there were different issues. KCAI is a private institution, and it's a small institution. So I know they do have a similar to the LGBTQIA or Pride Alliance at UMKC. They have groups like that, but I don't know how large they are. So they were coming to UMKC to have more people, more connections, I believe, is why they ended up coming.
Gotcha. When you were at UMKC, what had your experience been up until that point? Were you already pretty comfortable with who you are and how you wanted to identify, or was that still a struggle for you? It's still a struggle for a lot of people at that age.
Right. I think so. I was definitely coming into myself my last year. I feel like the timing could have been better, just because I started my transition in 2012 and I graduated May 2014. So I wanted to do more on campus. So I felt like I kind of cut that time short. So it was definitely way more coming into myself. A lot of people said their reactions, you know, knowing me prior to transition at the jobs I worked at, were saying, you know, you're 150% more confident. It's like you're yourself, but so much more coming out of the shell, being way more confident. So there's definitely other stuff that, you know, I'm 24, I'm still working through some stuff and identity, but I was definitely coming to myself, and I can only thank UMKC for that.
Where did you grow up? Was it in Kansas City?
Yes, in Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Was Lee's Summit a place where you were able to, I don't know, to hear the word transgender, to know what it meant, to recognize yourself in it, or was that something that you discovered later on?
Not at all. Lee's Summit is very conservative. I think there's a joke, but it has some truth to it, that you can find a church and a bank in at Lee's Summit, like two churches for every bank and three gas stations for every church. So it's a very conservative area. There's nothing, not even LGB anything. At my high school, we were not allowed to even start a gay-straight alliance because that would be too disruptive to the students. So the only thing I understood about transgender anything was from Rocky Horror Picture Show, and that was even not even understanding at all. It was just, this is perverse, don't do that.
Interesting. I am sorry that I haven't seen Rocky Horror Picture Show recently enough to even remember, but it sounds like maybe not a great memory.
Right.
Well, as the city's public university, UMKC could be seen as a microcosm of Kansas City. Can you tell me some of the specifics of how students navigate and maybe don't navigate life there who are transgender?
I think that's tough. It's from a student affairs perspective at UMKC, it's tough getting students involved already. UMKC is a commuter school. The majority of people just drive in and go to class and then go home. So it's hard to get the population in one place at once anyway. And that's the challenge that Jonathan and I faced at first. You know, we had panels and we had a few people come in, and then we tried to have an event and nobody showed up. You know, it was really difficult at that level. So thinking about, you know, it depends on the organization and how they're involved with the Kansas City community. But from my perspective, it's definitely a bubble.
Sandra, once you move into the broader city and adult life, are there different versions of those same organizational issues?
I think so. There are a lot of support organizations. There are a lot of advocacy organizations. So there's lots of different places that you can get involved. And I think sometimes people play nicely together. I think sometimes people don't play nicely together. But there are a lot of support groups in Kansas City, and a lot of trans people are involved in a lot of them.
We've been using this phrase, transgender community. Would you say that this is a community? Like a unified community?
It's, as I said earlier, it's not a homogenous community. It is a community. It is my community. And, you know, it's a community that we should be proud of, because there's a lot of people who are struggling through some very difficult times, and a lot of people who have made it, and a lot of people coming behind us. And so it is a community. I think there is a sense of community. But just like any community, there are cliques. There are, you know, different people that hang out in different places and have different interests and different, you know, things going on in their life. So it's a community, but it's not a homogenous community, just like any other.
Caroline Gibbs, we've been talking, referring a little bit to the Transgender Institute, but and you founded that. But when did you first become involved in transgender issues?
About 20 years ago. I met transsexual people in the Northeast who were trainers.
The Northeast Coast, not
the
Northeast
Kansas City. Coast.
Okay.
Right, right. And they were people who were, as a result of no one existing who was a therapist who knew the first thing about transgender, they decided to take the bull by the horns and become trainers. So they went around the Northeast and they trained clinicians. So I sat in with them, and I learned, and I absorbed, and I got outraged because of their plight in this world. And I decided, I got very close to most of them as friends, and I decided at that time that somehow, some way, I would help this population. I didn't know how.
When you talk about plight, can you describe what kinds of things you were hearing that outraged you?
Oh, unbelievable things. Violence, persecution, whispers, murders, violence of many kinds, verbal violence, emotional violence, physical violence, you name it, and it was there at that time.
Wow. What brought you to Kansas City to do the work that you do?
Well, it was either Milan to continue my singing career, or it was Kansas City. So I chose Kansas City for a number of reasons.
Yeah, that might not be the obvious choice to a lot of people.
Absolutely, but it was to me, and also because of my circumstances, but practical circumstances. But in any case, I ended up in Kansas City and decided to go for a graduate degree in counseling psychology, and went ahead and began to see my first transgender patients. And I had a knack for it. I don't know how to describe it. I'm not trying to sound arrogant, but somehow it was easy for me to figure it out. And not that I'm a trans person. I'm a cisgender person, as it's described.
Can we define that term too?
Absolutely. The easiest way to understand it is that it's someone who is not transgender. So I'm a cisgender woman, and I, how can I explain? I've kind of lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
So if you could prompt me, Gina.
Well, no, that's fine.
Your internal identity matches your
yes.
Your physical identity, your physical.
Absolutely. Okay. So somebody, a cisgender person, to be absolutely thorough, is someone who is born with a biological self that matches their inner sense of themselves in the brain and the heart.
So you've been doing this work in Kansas City for a long time, counseling a lot of people going through different kinds of struggles and journeys. Is the transition experience pretty similar no matter where you live and the culture of your city or town, or is your environment a big part of how this all plays out?
I believe that the environment is essential. For example, if we take New York City or San Francisco, they're moving along quickly into gender fluidity in a way that our country, our part of the country in the middle and center of the country is not really, we're catching up, but we're not understanding it as well and experiencing it as much as people in San Francisco and New York City, for example.
Sandra, is that your perception as well?
Oh, absolutely. I'm the state chair for Equality Kansas, so we do legislative advocacy at the state and local levels in the state of Kansas. And, you know, the things that we're dealing with, the impressions and stereotypes that we're struggling to overcome in Kansas, you know, are things that they overcame a long time ago or a lot farther along in California, for example. So Caroline is absolutely right.
What are those situations? What kind of situations do people overwhelmingly struggle with as they navigate work, play, and everything else in our area?
Well, you know, unemployment is a huge issue. Unemployment and underemployment for the trans community is a huge issue. All of us sitting at the table know people personally who have been fired as they came out. And these are people who were long-term employees, good employees. And the only reason that they were fired is because they transitioned. It wasn't about their skill set. It wasn't about their qualifications for the job. It was about the fact that they were going to be living as an opposite gender. And
I think that's shameful. Do employers typically communicate that in some kind of code, or do they just come right out and say that that's the reason?
They can come right out and say it in the state of Kansas because there's no protections. In other places like parts of the state of Missouri, including Kansas City, Missouri, which has good protections, they couldn't say that. They'd say it in code to try to get around it.
Central Standard is off to a quick break. Join our conversation about the transgender experience in Kansas City when we return. We'd like to hear your story. 816-235-2888. Don't go away. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's show is inspired by a new reality TV show set in Kansas City. It's called New Girls on the Block, and it follows a group of transgender women through their daily lives. Is there something unique about the Kansas City transgender experience, or is the show representative of what this entire community deals with everywhere? We're talking to Caroline Gibbs, Sandra Mead, and Luke Harness about that. So, you guys, the first two episodes of New Girls on the Block are out. Have you all seen them?
Yes.
I watched the first episode last night.
I have not, unfortunately, but I am planning on catching up. I've just been too busy.
I understand that. Luke, what do you think?
Well, I tend to not enjoy reality shows just because of the excessive drama and kind of shock factor. But I definitely appreciate that the show's purpose is to allow everybody to see, the audience, that trans people are regular people, and trans people have everyday lives and everyday struggles. And some of those involve transition, and some of those don't. And so I think it's a great media for audiences to see and see that trans people are regular people. The reality show effect is not my favorite, though.
Your taste remains your taste.
Yeah, exactly.
The characters on the show are all trans women. Does that bother you at all, or does that feel just like a framing device that works for the show?
No, I think that's great. I think that it's interesting. You'll hear different things from different people within the community, whether they're trans men or trans women. But I think, and it's statistical fact, that trans women, especially trans women of color, are the most marginalized group in the LGBT community. So any kind of, you know, recognition in any kind of way that they can get out there and share their stories is awesome, especially considering, you know, there's trans misogyny as well. And I think trans women are less accepted than trans men for multiple reasons.
And that's something that you experience just in talking to people? That feels like a reality to you?
Yes, definitely. Especially with considering, you know, if people decide to do hormone replacement therapy, testosterone is much stronger than estrogen in the body. So for trans men like myself with this scraggly beard that I have right now.
You do have a little
bit.
Shadow.
It's a beard. Okay. So it's not a full beard yet, but it's getting there.
No, I mean, it's good.
Thank you. That's what you're supposed to say. You know, testosterone is good for trans men because, you know, I get the facial hair, you know, the fat redistributes to my stomach. But it's just my voice deepens. It's a lot easier to pass as a bio male. You know, I walk down the street, people have no idea about me. For trans women, that's not necessarily the case. Being born as males and having that testosterone, their voice can't change with estrogen. Their facial hair doesn't go away. These are permanent things. So it's harder to assimilate, if that's what people want to do, to be read as females in public.
This is maybe just par for the course with reality shows, but I have some mixed emotions when it comes to the voyeuristic aspect of it. On the one hand, getting a window into these intimate moments like a transgender woman coming out to her wife's family, that creates just tons of empathy, I think. I mean, I learned something by seeing what that's like. But on the other hand, do you think it can reinforce the idea that there's something unusual or different, like something for television viewers to gawk at? I don't know where I stand on this.
I believe, this is Caroline, I believe that this is an ideal first stab at a production company embedding with a group of women who are transgender. It's true, it is in a sense voyeuristic, but there is no other way to really accomplish what we wanted to accomplish, which was to show these women as both funny, entertaining, sad, dramatic, and all of the things that people experience as human beings, that we all experience. So for me, of course, I'm biased because I love the show, but I do believe it was well done in that regard. And I don't get the sense of being voyeuristic when I watch these women. I will add that for 1 year, these women and I met monthly, it actually turned out to be, to talk about the pros and cons of coming out, giving up one's privacy forever for a very small amount of money in the beginning. And these women all agreed in the end. There were some lively and angry discussions, but all of them agreed in the end to go for it in order to help even one transgender person. There's another interesting point, if I could just jump in for a second, and that is the future holds an FTM, or female-to-male show, trans men's show, most definitely. We're planning on that.
That's good to hear. Sandra, do you have a take on this idea? I mean, I just think even in having a conversation like this one, honestly, there's a certain tension between saying, hey, we're people like everyone else, and saying, Let's look at this experience through this particular lens. Is that a tension that you feel?
You know, I think it can be a double-edged sword. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think, kind of like Luke, I'm not a big fan of reality shows because I find most of them are not reality at all. Most of them are scripted, and they're billed as reality shows. And when you watch them, they're as fake can be because everything done on it is scripted. I mean, who's gonna live on a beach and play games to bang on a drum? I don't know, just as an example. So,
That said,
visibility is such a critically important thing for the trans community. Not necessarily all visibility is good, but visibility is good. So if it's done well, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm sure, knowing the people, and I know at least one of the ladies themselves, I'm sure they've done it well. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, and if it comes off as scripted or if it comes off as real life. I think if it comes off as scripted, that could be seen as problematic. If it comes off as real life, then maybe that'll be a good window, a good lens for people to see really what life is like.
One of the storylines in the show that caught my interest was the athlete's story. Jamie's been training for a triathlon. I want to play a clip where we learn that her triathlon plans might be foiled. Just to set the scene, Jamie and her girlfriend are short on cash after gender reassignment surgery, so they're living in Jamie's mom's basement. They're making dinner when Jamie's mom comes down the stairs.
What are you doing here?
Well, I got a letter today from that triathlon.
Done there.
Okay. They're having issues, Jamie.
What kind of issues?
I think he's being pressured by other women in the triathlon that think that it is unfair for you to compete against them. And they're not sure that they can let you compete as a female. They're just not giving a firm yes or no on the race.
would... I wanted to compete.
I know, Jamie. Jamie, he didn't say no. He didn't say no. He just needs more information. He needs some time to develop a policy, maybe. I don't know. I'll do whatever I need to do to help you with this. Okay?
Okay. I don't have an unfair advantage.
Well, except for the fact that you're my daughter. But I'll do whatever it takes, Jamie, okay? Maybe if we offer to provide your medical records, maybe if we offer to have you tested for estrogen levels to show that you don't have any advantage from having male hormones or anything.
Well, I had a checkup a month ago and she tested my hormone levels and they were fine.
Well, let's offer to provide that information to him then. And let's provide him information on all the other sporting bodies that do allow trans women to compete as women.
The International Athletic Federation,
yeah.
The NCAA, like all of those.
All of those.
USA Triathlon, just because this race isn't a sanctioned race, they think they can do whatever they want.
Jamie, they're just not educated. We're going to educate them, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
So much to unpack here. I really hadn't thought about things like athletic competitions before, and just this idea that there are certain interests a person might have where that need to check a box for male or female could become contentious. Are there other kinds of experiences like that?
Well, obviously the bathroom issue, that was mentioned earlier. Just going to the bathroom is something we all have to do multiple times a day. And that can be such a contentious, fearful thing to have to do. Certainly, sporting events are critically important. And that was a very interesting segment. I look forward to watching that. People don't understand. People think that just because we were assigned birth at male, that therefore we have an advantage for the rest of our life. And that's simply not the case. I've been on hormones for over 5 years now, and my testosterone level is lower than a natal female. I can't open jars anymore. I have lost so much strength, so much muscle mass. So, I would certainly not have an advantage in any competition against any woman. But people don't realize that. People are just not educated. But there are other contentious situations.
And doing an activity, if you did have to participate as in the category of man, like how would that experience be for you? Would that be like really upsetting?
I wouldn't do it. I'd absolutely refuse. I'm not a male.
Right.
Unfortunately, people don't understand the science, and we certainly don't have time to go over the science, but there's enough medical and social science built up now that show that this is a medical condition, not a mental condition. And I'm sure that Caroline could go into that quite a bit. But no, I would absolutely refuse. I would not compete at all anywhere as a male.
That her mom mentions maybe he needs time to develop policies. I would think that there are a lot of fields that don't yet have policies in place. Is that something that you face, and does that put you in the position of becoming an educator and an activist?
Well, I do that often. I have been an activist for years now with Equality Kansas and other organizations, but that's actually something that I do with local groups that reach out to me and are trying to put in policies that are trans-inclusive. A recent one was Camp Quest. It's a children's camp that is held every summer. I think this is going to be their third year. And last year I helped them write a policy to make them LGBT inclusive. And Luke joined me this year while we went and talked to them and made sure their policy was up to date. And we walked through role play with them because they're going to have trans campers this year. And so there are organizations, and we do help them do that. And we're always willing to help them do that.
Luke, how have you felt about almost obligation to be an educator and to be someone who makes those first steps in certain situations?
Well, I naturally want to be an educator anyway. I really want to work in student affairs and higher education. That's really important to me. But I do get a lot of that from, there are a lot of people, we're not required, we're not obligated to educate others. There are so many resources, online for cisgender people and transgender people to look up themselves. So there's no obligation that I have to go ahead and educate people. But I feel like it may be, a life calling, if you want to name it that. But I definitely want to raise awareness, social awareness, and education. So that's just something that I want to do personally. So you got lucky.
Let's talk to Rosa in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Rosa.
Hi. So you were talking earlier about the voyeuristic nature of this TV show and all TV shows that are currently on the air or have been on the air about trans people. And a lot of that comes from the fact that they're done by cis people, cissexual people. And I think that it's a red herring to say that, that this show necessarily has to be voyeuristic, because there are a lot of works that trans women specifically have created that could have been published instead of a cissexual perspective on this. Works like Mira Solier Ross, she's a director from Canada. She's a transsexual woman who specifically talks about transsexual issues and sex worker issues as opposed to transgender umbrella issues. I just wanted to say that I don't think that's fair to say that, that you had to be voyeuristic in this, because you could have easily published a trans woman's work instead of a cis person's work.
Caroline, how do you respond to what Rosa is saying here?
Rosa, I really believe that maybe there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding. I think most people who have watched the three episodes of this show are not feeling that it's a voyeuristic show at all. It's, as you heard from the last clip with Jamie and her mom, Jamie bursts into tears. Those are not scripted tears. Those are tears of absolute and utter devastation that she can't be the athlete that she wants to be and has always been.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I was the one who used the term voyeuristic, but I more referring to like reality television in general. The format has that history.
Yeah. And I do agree with you, however, Rosa, about using cisgender people to be the producers, to be the directors, to be the actors. There are some shows I could mention, which I won't, which use cisgender people when there are so many transgender people who could do better jobs because they have the experience, obviously, the life experience of transgender men and women.
You know, Caroline, I want to ask you a question because the fact that this show is set in Kansas City, I get the feeling from these first two episodes that a lot of what these women are dealing with is on some degree universal and not necessarily about Kansas City specifically. But is the fact that this show's set here, does that do something for Kansas City or for Kansas City's transgender community?
I believe so. And I believe if people will take the time to watch this show, there are five episodes of it. We're hoping more will be picked up. But I believe that people who are not educated about transgender can certainly learn from this show that transgender people are human beings. There is nothing like, even if it's on television, contact with people to undermine and let go of bias.
It seems like this would be something that I'd put in the category of mainstream acceptance, building mainstream acceptance. Sandra, what's your feeling about how far we maybe have to go or have come when it comes to mainstream acceptance in Kansas City?
I mean, not only Kansas City, nationally, we are moving at light speed, it seems, lately. Just the last few years is amazing, and a lot of what's brought us there is the stories about youth and accepting and tolerant parents and things like that. But we're absolutely moving at light speed. And I love the fact that there is a show coming out of Kansas City, which again is considered part of the Bible Belt by most of the country. They're looking at these trans women and their lives out of Kansas City. And I think that helps acceptance throughout the nation.
What can people do to be good allies? I think uncertainty about that can make people shy and maybe even reluctant to engage.
I think that's a great question. Absolutely respect people's names and gender pronouns. And if you're not sure, ask them. There's no harm in asking them, what would you prefer to be called? What's your preferred pronoun? Absolutely respect that. Don't stare. Don't ogle. Don't ask their real name. The name they give you is the only name that you need to know. Don't ask about their birth sex. Don't ask about their surgeries. I have no right to ask you about yours. You have no right to ask me about mine. So I think those are some key things.
Well, Sandra Mead, best of luck to you in your last few months with Trans Talk on KKFI.
Thank you.
And Caroline Gibbs of the Transgender Institute, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you, Gina.
Luke Harness, great meeting you.
You too. Thank you.